the gap between gold and the gold stocks is the widest it's ever been, number one. Number two, the valuations, you know, I'm a value investor, so I do look at valuations. Gold stocks rarely can be, you can rarely say gold stocks in the same sentence as value. But I mean, you look at the gold stocks now and the XAU, the individual stocks, Barrick, Agnico, they're selling at close to their lowest price to cash flow multiples, price to free cash multiples in their entire history.
Adrian Day Asset Management. Good afternoon to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Andy, and good to see you again.
It's really good to see you again. Just to all my viewers and audience, Adrian, I just got to bring this up. Everybody's going to look at me and I'm all bundled up because it's 40 degrees in Atlanta, record cold almost here. And Adrian is sitting in really nice, I think 78 degrees is what he said he was giving me over.
82.
That's so. Anyways, I'm really looking forward to our talk here. The reason is gold has been ripping really since the new year, if you would, and gold stocks have been ripping as well, specifically the last probably 3 weeks since the end of January, but they've had a really strong all of January and February. But want to get your thoughts and opinion on why, where we're at. Let's start with the gold market.
Okay. Well, you know, gold, I mean, I think we all know the main reasons that gold is up, and that's because of the central banks. And, when you look at 2024, when you look at the numbers, for last year, it was the third highest year on record. So I've heard some commentators say, oh my gosh, you know, the central banks are not buying as much as they used to. And certainly, you know, in the fall, there was a bit of an easing, but they came back strong at the end of the year. China, as you know, came back in November and December. And the central bank buying ended up very, very strong, just down, obviously, from the record 2023. So it seems to me the central banks are going to continue to buy gold. Maybe the pace will slow. But when you look at why they're buying to diversify their reserves away from dominance of the dollar. Remember, it wasn't that long ago that the average or the aggregate for central banks' foreign reserves was over 70% in U.S. dollar. So I know if I had over 70% of my clients' assets in a single asset, the SEC would ask me why. And so just for prudence, they want to diversify. And of course, that's stepped up with the weaponization of the dollar. And I ask you a question, I'll ask it rhetorically. Maybe I'll answer it. I don't know. If I answer it, it's not rhetorical. But when President Trump threatens the BRICS with 100% tariffs, if they don't return to using the dollar, do you think that's going to make Brazil and South Africa and Indonesia, is that going to make them say, oh gosh, we're really sorry, what a mistake? Or is it going to cause them to step up their efforts to, not necessarily to move away from the dollar, but to insulate themselves from the possibility, of their reserves being under attack? I'll answer the question. I would suspect it's the latter, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think I think the central banks are going to continue to buy gold. When we talk about moving away from the dollar, there's not an awful lot that they want to buy other than gold. So I think the central banks are going to continue to buy gold. We've seen other buyers, Chinese buyers step up. Wealthy individuals and families in the Middle East are buying. Obviously, wealthy individuals and hedge funds in the U.S. are buying. But the North America generally is still lagging dramatically.
Yeah, I want to talk about that in a second. But first, let me ask you this. Since it's been on such a run and really ripped, Do you expect to have a pullback in here? And again, I totally know and believe that you're a longer term investor and you've been doing this a lot longer than I do. So you tend to wait any pullbacks out. But yeah.
Yeah.
Closer near a top, do you see it getting too euphoric?
I wouldn't say we're near a top. It depends whether you talk about a daily top or a weekly top, but I wouldn't say we're near any kind of top. But it would not surprise me to see some kind of pullback. If you just look at a graph, we've had a couple of occasions over the last 12 months when gold has sort of moved away from that trend dramatically higher. And that's certainly been the case in the last several weeks. But I tell you honestly, Andy, every time I thought there's going to be a meaningful correction, it's been pretty short and shallow, even after the election or right ahead of the election. It was obvious Trump was winning. I thought we were going to see a bigger pullback in gold than we did see. But the other occasions, it's been very short and shallow. And I have to say, the resilience of gold has been nothing short of amazing. Obviously, we had a down day on Friday, but for those of you who are looking at your screens on President's Day instead of whatever people do in Atlanta, they don't go to the beach, I'm sure. But whatever you do on President's Day, you know, gold is up $15 today. So it's come back. It hasn't recovered everything, but it's certainly bounced back meaningfully.
Yeah. So is there anything too, and whenever gold starts to give it a rep, and by the way, good answer. I've also been surprised as well that we haven't corrected more, and it's the resiliency has been very, very impressive. I would agree with you. Is there anything to it? I don't know what to make of this. Whenever gold really starts to rip as it is now, and it's ripping, is this a sign of, is there a problem in the physical market with deliveries, contract deliveries? Do you know anything about that? Or do you have an opinion on that?
No, I don't think so. You know, we hear about that a lot, as you say. And obviously, the fact a lot of gold has come out of the London bulls, Bank of England bulls, over to the U.S., that's started people chattering about, oh, there's a physical shortage, and, we're going to have a shortage when the February contracts expire. I don't see it that way at all, to be honest. I mean, we had a lot of gold move from London over to New York during the COVID period. And now we're seeing the same thing happen again, because of tariffs and advance of tariffs. And it makes logical sense that either when you've got a pandemic, then you may have difficulty moving your gold, or when you think tariffs are going to be imposed, you move the gold ahead of those tariffs, because obviously nobody wants to pay 10 or 20% tax on the gold that they import. So I don't think it really signifies much more than that. And then, of course, as the gold started to move, you start to get higher prices in the U.S. than you got in London because of the fear of tariffs. And so suddenly you've got an arbitrage, which only encouraged more gold to come over. And of course, there's delays in delivery. I mean, it takes time to go into a vault and bring the gold up. But more importantly, the refiners, you know, mostly the gold goes from London over to Switzerland to be to be put into different bars, because in London they use 400-ounce bars, in COMEX is 1,200-ounce bars, and so the gold will be re-refined in Switzerland. Well, the refiners get very, very backed up when there's a huge surge. And so you've had now these long delays, or so that just adds to the, I was going to say rumor mongering, but the chatter that, oh, there's a shortage. Look, there's a delay in actually getting your gold. Well, it's primarily just because it all needs to be re-refined, and there's only so much you can do. So no, I mean, I think it's very interesting. I mean, when you see $30 premiums on U.S. gold, New York gold over London gold, that's certainly very interesting. But I don't think it signifies that we're running out of physical.
Got it. So let's go back and talk about the American demand, if you would, or the U.S. demand. And there's a lot on that, especially as it pertains to the stocks and the equities. And that's one of the things you really, really specialize in and make a name for yourself. Are you seeing demand for U.S. gold equities, or I should say precious metals equities? Is that beginning to, are U.S. investors really trying to, retail investors taking notice, if you would? Are you seeing that?
Only very, very marginally, to be honest. Let me just say something that'll probably blow the mind of many of your readers. The GDX and the GDXJ, both of those funds, have not had a single day of inflows this year. So even in February, we haven't seen a single day of net inflows into either of those two funds. The GDX has lost $1 billion this year in outflows. The GDXJ, of course, is a lot smaller, so it's lost more, but it's still lost about over 400 million. So really quite astonishing.
It is.
In a little bit of smaller inflows in the last few days. But there's no dramatic, far from a dramatic rush into gold stocks. The outflows are still continuing, which is really astonishing.
It is.
But it makes you wonder when a North American individual investor and the small institutions, because remember, a lot of small institutions like family offices and so on, they use the GDX and GDXJ. When those people and individuals, as I say, and generalists generally start to move into gold, I mean, it just makes you think of what kind of dramatic moves we can have.
Yeah, absolutely. So that just goes to show that there's still tremendous value then in the gold stocks, and almost, I would dare to say, like we've never seen before relative to the price of gold.
Absolutely. The gap between gold and the gold stocks is the widest it's ever been, number one. Number two, the valuations, I'm a value investor, so I do look at valuations. Gold stocks rarely can be, you can rarely say gold stocks in the same sentence as value. But I mean, you look at the gold stocks now, and the XAU, the individual stocks, Barrick, Agnico, they're selling at close to their lowest price to cash flow multiples, price to free cash multiples in their entire history. Barrick is within 10% of its all-time low valuation. We're not talking price, we're talking valuation. Agnico is certainly in its lowest decile in its entire history. Now, these are abnormalities, because normally when the price of gold goes up, multiples start to expand. And so to have number one, gold at record highs, at the same time that the gold stocks are trading at very, very low multiples relative to their historic multiples. And number three, to have that at the same time as margins are expanding. Let's not forget that. And I've said this before, every quarterly conference call I get on with every company, they talk a lot about costs, and how their costs have gone up and what their cost containment measures are and everything else. I wish someone on one of these calls would just say, yeah, our costs are up 3%, but look at what gold's done in the same time. The margins are expanding dramatically. So the gold sector is the only sector, well, not the only sector, sorry. It's the sector with the greatest growth in cash flow. Every quarter this year, the cash flow has increased. And I think that's going to continue. The oil price does not appear as though it's going to run away from us. And I mention oil because, of course, it's the largest cost input into running a mine. And so, you know, you get a 2-4% cost increase across the board. That's, I would say, meaningless, but it's minor compared to the increase in cost of, in the price of gold. And so to have that combination of record high gold prices, very low, historic low valuations, and expanding multiples, at the same time, but North American investors generally are not in your in the sector, is just an astonishing opportunity. And if I may, Andy, I mean, just to give an illustration of the potential leverage, you look now, according to various studies, the average North American has less than 0.5% of their portfolios exposed to gold, and that's physical as well as stocks. The 50-year average is closer to 2% for North Americans. So even if you go halfway towards the historic average, that's still a doubling of the interest. That's still a doubling of the exposure. You look at the entire gold sector in the world, it's about 600 gold stocks, about $600 million right now. You look at the market cap of just 5 tech stocks in the U.S., it's over $15 trillion.
Right.
So you only need a tiny amount, a small amount of the money that's in the tech stocks to roll over. And obviously, as we talked before, some of them will go into foreign markets, some will go to emerging markets, some will go into real estate, some will go into value stocks or small cap growth or defensive stocks. But some of it surely will come to this sector that is exhibiting such dramatic cash flow growth. So you only need a very small amount of that money to flow into gold stocks to be meaningful.
Yeah. What do you think would be a catalyst for that to happen? Just continually high gold prices, or look in your crystal ball?
It used to be $64, didn't it? I think it's now $64 trillion question. That's the big question. I think I don't think higher gold prices are going to do it, because they certainly haven't done it for the last year. I honestly thought that it would. If you'd have asked me at the end of 2023, what's going to make retail investors get into gold, I'd say, oh, when we're at 2400 or 2500, then the sparks are going to fly. Higher gold prices have not done it. You know, maybe at some point they will. 3,000 is a nice round number. Maybe at some point they will. But I think what's really going to get U.S. investors into gold stocks is when the broad market declines. And it doesn't have to be a crash, but just when you start to see, the Magnificent Seven cease to be so magnificent, cease to be, when the S&P ceases to be a one-way street. I mean, look, let's face it. At the moment, what I call a normal investor, not a gold bug, but just a normal investor sitting there in Atlanta, opens his monthly statement, and his account's up. And every month his account's up because the S&P keeps going up. Why would he look elsewhere? I mean, why would he do it? Once his account starts to decline, doesn't have to decline a lot, then people start to look for other places to put their money.
Yeah, no, that's well thought of. That's an interesting take, and I actually do agree with you. I don't think, what's the definition of insanity? You know, keep on expecting a different outcome with something that and doing the same thing over and over again. And so I don't really see that the higher gold price, particularly, maybe it will, but.
I mean, at some point, yeah, if we get to 10,000 or 100,000, yeah. I'm sure that'll grow. But here's an astonishing thing for you. But I bet you could ask 100 regular investors and 1 in 100 at the most would realize that the XAU is up 52% in the last 12 months. even after last Friday's drop. And the S&P is up 23%.
Yep.
The XAU has more than doubled the performance of the S&P over the last 12 months.
Yeah.
And gold has outperformed the S&P as well.
Yeah. But
most people don't even realize that.
No, you're right. I have those conversations all the time. And when I mention that to people, they're always shocked and surprised, but they still don't do anything.
Yeah. Well, I am very, very surprised. Look, I'm less surprised that there's not a flood of money into gold stocks, given that the S&P is still going up, given that the dollar's strong, given that apparently inflation is under control. Although if you look at just the last 6 months, forget the last 2 years, don't go back to COVID, just look at the last 6 months, you'd think inflation is moving up dramatically. It's in a strong uptrend. But anyway, but given that people think inflation is under control and interest rate declines are on pause because inflation is moving back up, the Fed is much more cautious now. You know, it's not surprising there's not a flood of money into gold stocks. I'm absolutely floored that there are still withdrawals.
Yeah. That's surprising.
Yeah.
That's very surprising.
And we're getting it in our fund, you know, the fund I manage. I probably will get shot by somebody but we're not the only fund. Most gold funds you talk to are getting ongoing redemptions.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, let's talk about stocks. In the past conversations we've talked about, you've name dropped some of the bigger players, Agnico, the Newmonts, the Barricks, the Heklas. What are you like, both the big as well as smaller producers and any juniors out there that you're currently looking at that you do like?
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously anytime anyone asks that question, you've got to say, not only who are you and what's your risk tolerance, but what's your time frame you're looking for? The best possible stock with the least risk for the next year or two, or are you looking at the highest possible potential in the next week? And the answers are different. I mean, you know, from the point of view of building a portfolio that you're going to hold for the next year, two, three, for the next gold bull market, you know, Agnico to me is still without a shadow of doubt the best of the big mining companies. It's not necessarily the cheapest, but as I just said, it's certainly cheap or undervalued relative to its own historic valuations. And it is, you know, the cleanest and the best, in my view, of the major mining companies. You know, they've all had, the big caps have all had moves in the last, as you say, few weeks. So to be honest with you, in the managed accounts, last week I was actually doing more trimming than I was, more selling than I was buying. And, you know, I don't expect to be buying much more, you know, this week, because I think we will get lower prices. But, you know, but certainly, Agnico would be one, and Franco-Nevada again would be a great buy. A very good buy, I should say. Remember that the Cobre Panama, which was their largest single asset at 19% of their revenue, and that's been suspended, so it's not there. Remember, they've written that off. So it's not in their stock price at all. So when that comes back, and remember, they're not the operator. They don't have to make concessions. They own the stream. When that comes back, that would be a meaningful re-addition to their revenue. So among the big ones, I like those. But I mean, I still think Barrick, for people with a little more tolerance and patience, you know, Barrick is still very, very undervalued on an asset basis. Of course, most of their big assets are in risky jurisdictions. Well, that's not true. 47% of their gold actually comes from Nevada. But outside of Nevada, most of their gold is in risky jurisdictions. And certainly the risky jurisdictions are the ones that get the headlines. So there will be continued volatility in a stock price, but on an asset basis, it's far and away the cheapest, most undervalued of the big gold companies. Yeah, among the smaller ones, you know, most of the mid-tiers have had good runs. I mean, I think there's some Orion, you know, I think is a very good company, AU. Origin was still, you know, even though that's had a bit of a run, there's still room for that to move when they do a transaction on the Silicon royalty that they own. I don't think the potential from here is huge, but I would put it as more certain and more near term than some others. So if you're satisfied with more certain and more near term over huge, Origin is still a buy.
By the way, you name dropped them last summer. Well done.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're going to, the odds of them selling their royalty are very, very high. And they're obviously going to have to get at least the market cap for that royalty, and everything else will come free. I think the spinoff from Origin will be a very, very, the spinoff after they've sold the Silicon royalty will be a very attractive company with a good balance sheet, with cash flow, and with a bunch of, you know, smaller royalties with potential. But that's going, that's looking ahead of ourselves a little bit at the moment.
Yeah. You brought up a couple of royalties there, Franco-Nevada, obviously, and then Origin. I'm a big fan of royalties, and I'm almost to the place where, like, that's how I structure my portfolio. A lot of it, or even my mother's portfolio, is just because of the risk involved. They're just so low risk and very high upside. So,
well, the big royalties are very low risk, but people forget that they also have upside. And
yes,
this is the way I put it to people. You know, if you look at Wheaton, you look at the ones that have been around, Wheaton, Franco, Royal Gold, all of those companies held up. They held up much, much better than the miners when gold went down. But they also went up fairly dramatically, better than the XAU,
yeah,
when gold went up. Yeah. I think what we can say about those big cap royalties, they have leverage. They simply don't have as much leverage as whichever mid-tier or intermediate happens to be the big winner. So yeah. Franco's not going to go up tenfold from here, you know, in a normal gold bull market, but it's going to go up. And I will bet anyone who wants, but Franco, Wheaton, and Royal will be some of the top performers in the XAU. They just won't be the top performers.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. I also like the junior or the smaller royalties as well. I mean, the Cisco is you know, a little bit smaller than those big three. Among the juniors, Metalla, I think, has the highest potential. It's had a good move, but it has the highest potential because of their assets. On an asset basis, it's selling for less than 50% of their NAV. It's not particularly cheap on a cash flow basis, but as time moves a lot, they have a lot of longer dated royalties, some on particularly the copper royalties, which won't come on until the middle of next decade, right? So the market is not giving much value for those at the moment. But as time moves on and you get closer, you get closer to production, so they start to have value on these discounted cash flow models that people use. They start to have some value. But also, as you start to get close to production, the operators are putting out more press releases. And so they're generating excitement in the market. You know, those assets will start to be reflected in Metalla's stock price even before they start to cash flow.
Got it. Excellent. Oh, and anything you want to leave the viewers here with? I usually have you on every 3 to 4 months, but yeah, any parting thoughts over the next 3 or 4 months?
Well, again, I mean, I would say let's not forget that the XAU, I mean, it all depends whether you look at 1 month, 6 months, or 12 months, because the XAU looks pretty bad on a 6 month basis, but on a on a 1 month and on a 1 year basis, it's been pretty good. And, you know, I still think the place to be with most of our money is in the bigger companies, the bigger miners, the bigger royalty companies, which will be the ones that will attract the generalist money when the generalists return to the space, as they surely will.
Adrian, if people want to do business with you, how do they do that? How do they find you?
It's adrianday.com.
I'll put that in all of the show notes, and you manage a lot of money, both for accredited investors as well as smaller retail investors, correct?
That's correct. We do a lot of smaller, if you like, smaller retail investors, and we manage in global markets as well as just gold.
Yeah, excellent. Adrian, all of this in the show notes, I'm putting it in. I want to thank you, number one, for your mentorship. You don't know this, but over the last couple of decades, you've been one of those people that I've looked up to.
Well, and then
you're very welcome. And you've been a friend getting to know you over these podcasts and discussions we've had over the last couple of years. And I've seen you on the out on the road, and I'll see you in PDAC, I'm guessing.
PDAC, see you up there.
Yeah, fantastic. Adrian, thank you so much. Have a great day.
And you, thank you so much.
Thanks.